This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Don't think I'm going to come in tomorrow to work. Unless something goes wrong, but so far everything has been going fine. It's been a good week. Got a lot of good stuff done this week. I'm a little behind on the writing because we had a church business meeting this week. And I had my normal dinner with my buddy on the fourth Tuesday of the month. And then we had a church business meeting after that. And so by the time I got home, the Tuesday was pretty well gone. And Tuesday is my day to put down 750 words. So I'm about 750 words down. I'm hoping to get caught up on some of that tonight. We'll see. And then, of course, tomorrow. And I do have a doctor's appointment I'm going to take my dad to tomorrow, so I'm going to lose a little bit of time. But I take my computer right there in the doctor's office because writers write. That's what writers do. Writers write. Editors edit, writers write, procrastinators procrastinate. So there you go. So I find any place I can pop my computer open for a few minutes, especially if I can get on my headphones, I'm just fine. I sit there happy as a clam, just going away. Anyway, so the writing is proceeding along fine. The book is coming along. I've crested, what was the last? I think I'm up 110,000 words, something like that. Closing in on 110,000 words, maybe. So I'm right on schedule where I should be, and I think the shape is good. I don't think I'm going long this time. I have plenty of stuff to work with, so I have plenty of stuff to get me to the end of the book. That's all good. Thinking about the epilogue, I think that's going to be good. I think. Anyways, so all is well there. I think that's about it. We celebrated my dad's 95th birthday on Saturday. His actual birthday was on Friday, and we had a little get-together for him on Thursday. My beloved was not able to come because she was sick, but she bounced back from that. So either it was the flu or the flu shot helped her and it didn't really take her down too hard, which is good. I did not get a flu shot, but so far so good. I've been able to avoid it. Although, the man I report to at my major client went home sick this week. So if he was nauseated, we'll see. So that is all as well. I think that's about it. Everyone's growing. We're moving forward. All is well. Dad turned 95. Dad is convinced that this was his last birthday. He's convinced this is going to be it. So we'll see. I think this is my last one, he said. I've also been kind of trying to prepare for more feebleness, so I just finished installing a bunch of Alexa Echoes at his house and got them set up so he can say, Alexa, call Phil Ferrand, and it'll just call me. In addition to that, there's some ambulances or fire trucks or something coming here. I'm looking to see which way. Oh, they're turning. Okay, we're good. And I got him one just to see how it would work out. He called me this week and he said, so that Alexa, it plays all kinds of music, because I put up signs to tell him how Alexa can do things. So I put up one that says, Alexa, play in the name of song. So he's been using that. So I need to put up some more signs tomorrow. And he kind of liked that. And then you know, his house is still big enough there that I thought, well, it would probably be good if I got several of them and scattered them around the house. So he has three set up now. And, you know, pretty much anywhere in the house, if he says, Alexa, call Phil Farron, it'll ring through to me. So we at least got that under control. Anyways, last week, I talked about how the tenor of my life had shifted because I got cold and I didn't like the cold. And I came across a TED Talk that when I started listening to it, there were several things that struck me about this TED Talk. It's interesting. I am of the opinion that when we listen to things, when we take in information, we should try to be aware. We should try to be aware. And in the process of being aware, we can be wise. So it was interesting as I was listening to this TED Talk, because there were a lot of things about this TED Talk that I really liked. I mean, I was listening to it and I was thinking, yeah, that's good. That's good. I like that. That's good. Because it agrees with me, sort of. So that's always the deal, you know? Does it agree with me? But there were a lot of interesting concepts in this when discussing emotions and how emotions work. There were some other things, though, that I was going, wait a minute. because one of the things that I was thinking, wait a minute, is that this speaker, she spent several times, she addressed the fact that what she was saying was true because of all the research they've done, and it's good science, and it's good hard science, and they've shown that it's true. She kept making those claims, though, without necessarily supporting it with what she meant by science. And I actually had breakfast with a buddy this morning who happens to be a physicist. And I was kind of bouncing some of these ideas off of him because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just talking out the side of my mouth. And what I told him, and he seemed to agree with, was that when we're talking about science, when we're talking about hard science, classic definition science, what we mean is that we come along, we propose a hypothesis. On the basis of that hypothesis, we make predictions, and then we test those predictions with experiments. We experiment, we compare the results of the experiment with the results of the predictions made by the hypothesis. And from this, we decide whether the hypothesis has some potential truth in it. But at no point in science do we say, absolutely, that is absolutely true. Because real science, you may have an hypothesis, you may have a theory, but real science is always ready to be disproved. So no matter what our hypothesis is, no matter what our theories is, really no matter what the total weight of experimental data is, it is always possible within real science to have more experiments, different experiments, which disprove some or all of whatever the current hypothesis is. That's the way good machines would run science. Unfortunately, we are human beings, and because of that, often what happens is people get wedded to a theory that they then proclaim as the truth, and even if some data might arise that runs counter to that theory, they often just hold on to the theory. And my friend, when we were talking about that, nodded. He said, yeah. He said, people don't like to give up their theories, especially if they spent any portion of their professional life dedicated to this theory. They just don't like to give them up. So we see the influx of human stubbornness into the whole science thing. And you always have to keep that in mind. Now, people then also have a tendency to reinterpret and redefine what they call science. And sometimes what they do is they run a bunch of experiments and say, well, this could mean that and this could mean that, but they don't necessarily run projections and predictions off of that and then test those predictions. They just say, well, this is what we think because this is what we're seeing. Well, okay, that's not hard science. It is observation. And there might be some correlation in what they're trying to decide. But you don't know for sure if there's causation. And you don't know for sure if there might be things that are correlated to other things. So often in this TED Talk, this scientist, and I don't know what kind of scientist she is, but this neurologist? I don't know. Quoted a lot of times that she doesn't only think this is true, but she has the hard science to back it up, and yet there was no mention of any actual experiments. There was just a lot of observation of brain activity and those kind of things. So you can take that for what it's worth. I do think the model that has been developed from all this, the model that she has developed, has some real benefits to it. And I think she is experiencing those benefits. And so it's very much worthwhile. So anyway, she was talking about emotions. And the title of the talk is, You Aren't at the Mercy of Your Emotions, which is a really, really good statement. Because that's true. And she was talking about the one guy from the Boston Marathon bombers who had been caught. He was being sentenced, and how that part of the sentencing that comes about is, does it look like the person who's being sentenced is showing remorse? And we think we can actually look at a person's face and we can tell what emotions are there. But her contention was, no, we can't really. You know, we can guess, but we really can't tell what emotions are going on beneath the surface because every person is different. And in fact, this young man was from Chechnya. And in Chechnya, the thing is to sit there stoically, you know, no matter what happens. And so it's very possible that when the jurors saw him sitting there stoically, they thought, oh, well, he's not showing any remorse, so we should really just give it to him, which, okay. So that's a good point. And she was saying that they have analyzed hundreds of physiological studies involving thousands of test subjects. We've scanned hundreds of brains and examined every brain imaging study on emotion that has been published in the last 20 years. And the result of all of this research are overwhelmingly consistent. It may feel like your emotions are hardwired and they just trigger and happen to you, but they don't. You might believe that your brain is pre-wired with emotion circuits that you're born with, but you're not. In fact, none of us in this room have emotion circuits in our brain. Okay? So, okay. Now, again, she uses language to make it sound like this is scientific inquiry, but if you're all you're doing is analyzing results of stuff, you're coming to conclusions. But then if you come up with her hypothesis, the question is, how do you test it? And I'm not sure it's a testable hypothesis, except that we can all sit around and go, oh, that's an interesting idea. So the testable hypothesis, what are your emotions, really? The testable hypothesis that she came up with is that emotions are the guesses that your brain constructs in the moment where billions of brain cells are working together. So there is some input, and billions of brain cells fire up and start making predictions about what your state is, and that's partially where your emotions come from. They come from your other experiences in the past, because those flow into your predictions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, now I really like that idea. You know, frankly, I really like this idea. because it describes what people think is an automatic response is really something that can be analyzed and looked at and tested for veracity. And the process of looking at it and testing it for veracity can actually reverse it. And I've had that experience many times in my life. So she went on to give some examples, and again, it's kind of anecdotal stuff. She showed a bunch of spots on there, and your brain is trying to figure out, what am I looking at? But then when she puts the color into it, all of a sudden you see, oh, wait a minute, that's a snake. And then she takes the color back out of it, and you can still see the snake. And her point is that your brain is constantly trying to find patterns, which it is. It is, absolutely. I can't say that science has proved that, but experientially, absolutely, the brain is always trying to find patterns. And maybe you could even prove that from science. Anyway, so emotions then really end up kind of being predictions. And I like that term a lot for them. And I think it works out some really interesting ways. And as we're going through life, our brain is constantly making predictions about what's coming next. I'm actually pulled onto my driveway. So she's saying, if we understand this, then she said, we'll understand that physical movements have no intrinsic emotional meaning. We assign the meaning to them because we remember those physical movements in the past, or we remember those physical movements being tied to some other things, some stressors in our lives. And therefore, when we experience those physical movements, then suddenly we say, oh, that must be that. She said, for instance, idea of stomach churning. She said, well, our stomachs can have that feeling of churning for many, many different reasons. But we use context to figure out what I should be thinking this is happening to me. So if our stomach is kind of churning a little bit and we're walking into a test, then obviously, oh, that's nervous. That's what an emotion of nervousness feels like. But in fact, it might not be. You might just be hungry. Or if you walk into a coffee shop, and I'm checking my mail, one moment. Walk into a coffee shop, and you smell the coffee, and you smell the cookies that are baking. Now you feel that churning, oh, I'm hungry. But in fact, it's just a physical emotion, or a physical sensation that you are then mapping. You're mapping your feelings on, because you're predicting what you should be feeling because of what's around you. And I think that's a very useful thing. One of our little dogs from the neighborhood is coming down to welcome me, which is what the barking is in the side. I think that's a very good definition, and I think it's a very interesting way to go about it. And it can be very beneficial, because if you think about your emotions as a series of predictions, what you can then do is back your way up a little bit. And we'll get to that in just a minute. Let me see if there's anything else that she said in here that I'd like to highlight, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, she says, I don't mean you could just snap your fingers and change how you feel. Although we're going to come back to that as well. She talks about anxiety before tests and how you can harness that if you just think about the predictions that are happening. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, goes on. She says, so in her conclusion, I don't know about you, but I found this to be a really empowering, inspiring message. And the fact that it's backed by decades of research makes me also happy as a scientist. But I have to also warn you that it does not come with some fine print, because the more control also means more responsibility. If you're not at the mercy of the mythical emotion circuits, which are buried deep inside your brain somewhere and which trigger automatically, then who's responsible? Who's responsible when you behave badly? You are, not because you are culpable for your emotions, but because the actions and the experiences that you make today become your brain's predictions for tomorrow. Sometimes we are responsible for something not because we are to blame, but only because we are the ones who can change it. Now, responsibility is a big word. It's so big, in fact, that sometimes people feel the need to resist the scientific evidence that emotions are built in or not built in. Are built and not built in. The idea that we are somehow responsible for our own emotions seems very hard to swallow. What I'm suggesting to you is that you don't have to choke on that idea. Just take a deep breath, maybe get yourself a glass of water if you need to, and then embrace it. Embrace that responsibility because it is the path to a healthier body, a more just and informed legal system, and a more flexible and potent emotional life. Okay, so there's a lot of stuff in there. That's good. But coming back then to this idea that emotions are predictions, that your brain is predicting a scenario, and then that's what gets you amped up. That's what gets the hormones released. That's what gets the, you know, stress hormone or whatever released. That's a really powerful idea because you can then say, okay, well, what is truly being predicted here? Because let me give you an example. So we are out, it's in San Jose, we're visiting my brother, we happen to get a cheap price on a hotel, we don't know anything about San Jose, we tell my brother where we're staying. He says, oh, wow, that's kind of down in the center of town. Yeah? Is that bad? Well, I don't know that it's necessarily someplace I'd stay. Oh, okay, well, okay. So the next morning, I need to do some laundry. So I look up on my little Google app on my phone, and this several years ago, this was all new and novel, and I'm like, hey, there! Look at that. There is a, let me shut the garage door here. Look at that. There's a laundromat just around the corner. Pretty good. I think I'll just go over there, and I will do my laundry. So I pack up all my stuff in my backpack. At the time, I think I was writing Still Whispers, had my computer with me. I wandered down to the street. Now, one thing I noticed about the hotel is the hotel has bars over all the windows. Okay. And then I come out the front of the hotel and I realize I got to go around the corner. So I turn, I'm walking down the sidewalk and I look up. And there is a Latino man. He's coming towards me. Hard set face, hard set. He's got his game face on. You know, walking along the hotel. He's not just staring past me. He's walking along the hotel. And so I have a practice, and I exercise that practice when I grow near to him. I look at him, and I say, how are you today, sir? And his whole countenance changes just like that. He looks up, kind of a little bit surprised, and I smile at him. He smiles back. He said, good, how are you? I said, I'm well, sir. Have a great day. Thank you. All of a sudden, now, if I had let my flesh be involved in that, I would have looked at him and said, whoa, he's hard. Whoa, this guy looks rough. Whoa, I'm in danger. Whoa, because he can beat me up and steal and rob from me and that kind of stuff. And instead of letting all those things get away, when I looked at him and saw he had a really hard face, I thought, you know what? We're just going to go with the prediction. And the prediction is I'm going to greet him cordially. I'm going to smile. I'm going to treat him with respect. Let's just see what happens. And what happens is his face changes instantly. Now then, it's easy at that point for me because obviously he's not mad. He wishes me a good day. I go on my merry way. I go down, walk into the laundromat, got my little backpack. I am the only white face in that entire laundromat. But I'm used to that because I grew up in the Philippines. So I walk in, people are kind of staring at me like, who is this guy? You know, and I put my stuff in my thing, get my started, and I sit down in my little corner and flip open my laptop and I'm writing over there. Every once in a while, I look up and there's someone staring at me and I smile at them and I nod and they kind of look down, look away. Again, I could let predictions dictate, oh, you're a number here. No, what are these people? And are they going to attack you? Are they going to mug you? And it's, no, they're not. No. Because I know what those predictions are trying to tell me. And so I think if you are aware that emotions can manifest, that predictions can then manifest in emotions, you can back up a step and you say, okay, what predictions are being made right now? I have another way that I conceptualize this, and that is when I'm feeling this emotion that I'm interpreting as negative emotion, what lie is the flesh trying to tell me at this moment? Because typically when you're having some kind of a reaction, anger, fear, greed, what lie is the flesh trying to tell me at this moment? Now, obviously, if you're getting beat up or something, that's different. But, you know, if, for instance, you're driving down the road and someone cuts you off and you feel that, you know, come up inside you, that road rage. Okay, what lie is the flesh trying to tell me? The flesh is trying to tell me he saw me, he cut me off intentionally, he's trying to make me have a wreck, blah, 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 blah. She talked about that a little bit in here when she said, now, I'm not telling you you can switch your emotions immediately or just turn them off. But in fact, if you can get to that lie, figure out what that lie is and expose it for what it is, a lie, you can do amazing things with your emotions. Because you're driving down, you get cut off, and then you remind yourself, you know what? I have no idea what this person's situation is. And the fact of the matter is, I've made some stupid mistakes in the past when I've been driving, wasn't paying attention. And it's also true that sometimes when there is a crisis and people are driving along, that sometimes they're distracted. How do I know that this man's wife wasn't just in an accident? How do I know that his child wasn't badly hurt? How do I know that his wife isn't pregnant and she's at the hospital on her way to give birth and he's just trying to get down there? And he's just frantically trying to get from point A to point B. The lights just went off in the garage, so I turned on an interior light, which is what that click was. And what's fascinating to me is that when you do that, those emotions, they will evaporate. So that's what I say. I just absolutely agree with her that there are no hard built-in emotion circuits, that your emotions really are responding to the thoughts that are going on in your mind. And if we then take it one step further and we say that those thoughts that are going through your mind could be generated from one or two sources, either the flesh or the spirit, and it's up to us to decide which ones we're going to accept, which ones we're going to dwell in, then we can get to her conclusion at the end of this, that we can be responsible for our emotions. That emotions don't need to just toss us from side to side, because when we're having that emotion, we can back up and say, okay, so what is the flesh trying to convince me is about to happen in this situation? Or what is the spirit saying to me about this situation? And is that true? Is that something that's valuable? What am I expecting? You know, what are the predictions? And what's really important in this then is when you recognize what those predictions are, then you get a chance to decide whether you're going to pursue them or not. Because as the flesh whispers to us, if we decide we're going to dwell on those things, oh, I can't believe that guy cut me off. What is wrong with that guy? And he finally goes off and we go home and tell our wives, we tell our spouses, this guy cut me off. And I can't believe he just cut me off. And our spouses are going, who is that guy cut me off? Well, guess what? Next time someone cuts you off in traffic, next time it's going to be easier for you to go, because that's the flesh. The flesh grows within us. And once it gets our attention, it just keeps feeding us. But if we decide in that moment to tell ourselves, you know, I have no idea what this guy's situation is, and I know I've been guilty of a lot of stupid things, and I'm just going to give this man grace, then the next time it happens, it gets easier to give him grace. And then the quality of our life begins to improve. Because we're not going around condemning people all the time. We're going around giving people grace. And then we start getting to the reciprocality of life. Because as we give others grace, as we give them kindness, as we give them mercy, that reciprocality of life starts coming back on us, and people will give us and they'll grace and mercy and kindness. And it's an amazing thing to watch. So, you know, while I have just a few little nits to pick with the presentation, I think from a non-religious standpoint, this researcher has really come across something very important. that we don't just have to be buffeted around by our emotions, that we aren't guaranteed to feel certain things, that in fact there is a set of information that's behind our emotions, and it would do us well to examine that set of information and make the determination, what is it that's driving this? What lies are the flesh telling me right now to cause such negative emotions within me? Because if you can get to those lies and get a flashlight on them, it's amazing how fast they will scamper like cockroaches for the corners. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.